average of 85 days. He won twice in his tenure there. He's probably, yeah, you know, most of them are paid at least $1 million, if not more. He'll be paid off for his contract. When someone works it out, it'll probably be like £2 million a win. Pretty harsh on him because he didn't get a transfer window to do any deals. Swansea have sold two of their best players, their best centre-back and their best centre-forward in the summer. But it was a very strange appointment because although he had experience managing the US, he didn't really have experience in league football apart from in the French second division. It was a bizarre appointment. It turns out it was a hopeless appointment.
If you're John Van Schip this morning, you're looking at it and you're thinking, defensively, yeah, we need to sort things out. Because, you know, he's a top player himself defensively. He would have had a sleepless night at times last night looking at his back three, back four, you know, the way they defended. I mean, it all started with the showstopper himself, and he scores his standard goal from the set piece in the corner, and he rises well above everybody else in the box, and every time he goes into the box, you're just looking for him. And he sets the tone again for Melbourne City. He gets them off to a great start, 1-0 up, and then they just couldn't hold on to it. You know, it's almost as if they went 1-0 up, right, let's just take stock here, we'll hold on, we'll try and hang on. And Percy, the credit just kept coming back and coming back.
It's just amazing, the best experience. I've actually decided today that I'm never going to get married and I'm never going to have children because I want this to be the best day of my life, for the best of my life, so I won't ruin it.
Past nine here on Summer Mornings, just some of what we've covered so far today. Of course, Max Rushton, who joined us from TalkSport in the UK, with Liverpool's big win this morning, and Barb Bradley being dispensed of as the manager of Swansea. Grant Brebner, who was in the SEM box last night, recalling that unbelievable game, and then they're very contentious decisions, penalty-wise, and red cards given out to Melbourne City and Perth Glory playing at that 3-all draw. And Aaron Mullen, who we chatted to from Channel 9 today, who was on board Perpetual Loyal, which docked in about 2:31, record time in the Sydney to Hobart for the 72nd edition. Kieran Blake is with us. He's been regularly on SEN over the last few months, 365 days of sport. Good to see you, Beefy. Nice
morning
to have you on board.
BP, happy Christmas, happy New Year coming up. So, yeah, great time of the year for sport. Love it. I love this time of year where there's not much work happening and it's just a multitude of sports to get my teeth into.
Now, this time last year, as I peer across to the left here on Fox at the moment, it is the number one in the world of darts, Michael van Gerwen, the Dutchman, who is going about his business at the moment. In the night session, you were at the World Championship of Darts.
Yeah, near enough a year ago to the day we were at Alexandra Palace, and absolute ball there. We had one of the best darts, best night of darts going as well. The quality of darts is unbelievable. Phil Taylor lost in a seven setter, and Peter Wright got up in a seven setter as well. And just the atmosphere at Ali Pali, you know, the Christmas spirit and everything else, people getting into it. It's just the alcohol flows profusely, and the crowds get into it. And I don't know if you've kind of, you guys have seen the way Ali Pali is set up. There's big tables down the bottom area, and then there's stands around the outside, and the kind of the stands look onto the tables, and there's this back and forth banter going on between the tables and the stands, and you know the guys in the stands think that the guys on the tables are really boring. They start chanting boring, boring tables, and the tables guys chant back. And the one main thing we really noticed, and the guys from Matchroom and PDC were telling us, that when the darts is of a really high quality, the kind of the nature of the banter kind of drops off a bit.
Yeah.
But when the darts quality drops off a little bit, then it's a free-for-all.
Yep.
So, So, you know, saying that, they have a great time and they go full on, but they are darts aficionados. And to be honest, we met so many people there, but there were people there from Greece, there were people there from Germany, from Spain. Mm. All of a sudden, the darts has become, you know, a bucket list type event for people to get to. And I'm not surprised. It's fantastic. And obviously watching this year's tournament, you know, myself, I've been interested in he's a Melbourne lad now, Corey Cadby.
Yes.
Who's taking the darts world by storm.
Well, we sort of need a couple to stand up, don't we? Because I mean, we're talking to John McDonald, the voice of darts, a bit earlier this morning, and we've been used to Simon Whitlock flying the Aussie flag, so to speak, for a number of years. He's had a bit of a lean time, a little bit of a resurgence recently, but we need a few more Aussie names coming through.
Yeah, unfortunately, though, obviously the beard to be feared, yeah. Simon Whitlock. He got beat 4-0 in the second round after actually cruised through his first round. But Corey Cadby, he's a Tasmanian, and he's come to Melbourne to kind of make a name for himself in darts. Actually took out the World Youth Championships in November. That's how he kind of got into the PDC qualifiers. He had a run in the Australian Tour, which got him enough points to get through to qualifiers, and obviously took out the youth. But I don't think many people saw this. But in August, when the PDC come out and do a few tournaments in Australia, unfortunately the Melbourne tournament's not here for the minute, but strength and numbers will bring that tournament back, I'm sure. Just don't bring any tables and chairs. No. You know, don't bring the tables and chairs, and we might get a tournament back. But Corey Cadby actually knocked over Phil Taylor in Perth 6-2.
Yeah.
So I mean, that this is a sign that he is there for the long run, and darts could be a thing. And he actually in the qualifying round, he averaged 102.48, which is that's up there. That's up there with your Gary Andersons and MVGs and everything. So he just needs to hone his game. And the strange thing is, he's going to get a lot of the tournaments being in Britain.
Yep,
he's going to get a bit of hassle from the crowd. So in terms of that, he calls himself the King. May not be the best nickname for a darts player playing in Britain as well. No. But look, I think he's a star of the future, and he's going to come, you know, full steam ahead. So be prepared to hear this guy's name in future.
Yeah, absolutely. Michael Van Gerwen, I'm just watching him up on the screen. He sat in your chair, Beefy, I reckon, 2 years ago. Yep. It was an amazing chat with a guy who just, when he walked through the door here, just oozed self-confidence, yep, and had a bit of aura about him for such a young guy in a sport that's been obviously dominated by Phil Taylor and that sort of generation. Raymond Van Barneveld had been around, you know, a lot longer, and this guy didn't fear anyone. And he said a great sort of, you could just tell a great composure about him, and a guy who could really succeed under pressure. And right now, he's the man to beat.
Well, indeed, and he's a man that plays on confidence. And the problem is with confidence is when you keep winning, you expect to win. And he's just flying through at the minute, and you know he's cruising through. And I think a lot of his matches, especially in the Premier League and everything, he's won before they even get to the hockey. Because he's banging out 110s regularly, and that's it's tough to beat. And they play a few tournaments behind closed doors in the UK that are solely for the betting industry. And it's and they play. And there was one tournament last year where he averaged 120.
Yeah.
So for every three darts he throws, he scores 120. And don't forget, he's got to hit doubles in there as well, to take your average down. And that's just phenomenal. Nobody's ever going to get near to MVG. You know, when he's banging out scores of 120, it's impossible. But tell you what, you talked about Barney.
Yeah.
Barney's looking very impressive.
He's,
yep. But the next round, he's got Adrian Lewis, which that's an absolute belter. So 2-time world champion against the 5-time world champion. And Barney's kicked around for so long now. And he's been the mainstay of Dutch darts before MVG. So in terms of his standing, but he's coming back. And that's going to be an absolute thriller.
It is phenomenal how far the sport has come. I mean, we've been sort of in this breakfast slot about this time of the year for the last 4 or 5 years, and it certainly captured our attention. And when you cross over there and cover it, and you speak to a John McDonald, who's the voice, and we've had Dan Dawson, you're a UK reporter over there, I mean, obviously the crowds that get along are phenomenal. Yeah. The amount of money these guys now can earn on the global tour all year round.
Well, Gerwin's just gone over, now with these prize money, he's just gone over the £1 million mark for this calendar year. So, yep. I mean, when I was growing up back in the UK, you know, your Eric Bristow's, John Lowe's, Jockey Wilson's, you know, they were sinking 8 or 10 pints a match, smoking. You know, they weren't exactly the best of athletes, and I don't suppose they really are now. But in terms of
water there.
Yeah, just water. And there's a bit of endurance. And, I don't think in the old days they used to have breaks even. Now they have a break for TV after every set, so they get a bit of a rest. But they go and practice anyway in the break, so they're still throwing darts. But I remember I sat down with Phil Taylor a few years ago, and he was telling me about his boxing regime, how he was using boxing to strengthen his arms, because the longer matches he was getting tired.
Yeah.
So in terms of that, it's fantastic. And it went through a massive lull before Matchroom took over. But yeah, the draw is the highlight now. There are players from all over the world. And that's the one thing the PDC has come in and said, right, to make this work,
yep,
we have to get players from America. We have to get players from Australia, New Zealand. We have to get players from Asia and mainland Europe. And they go out to Germany and they take tournaments out there. They go out to Greece. They go out to Spain. And there are tournaments everywhere, and it's encouraging people to get into darts. And we've talked before, Brett, about these sports you think you can play.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's no reason why anyone can't take up darts and have a good go at it. And every sport on an elite level takes practice, you know?
No idea. And with the money on offer, I mean, you could make a career out of this. Oh,
exactly right.
Gee, I've learned a bit this morning. So that's Fett Lip.
Some 41. Derek Whibley. Right, formerly Mr. Avril Lavigne, I think, at one stage.
There you go.
Yeah.
Hmm. I tell you what, I've been outdone just after six this morning. I reckon every song this hour that you put in will probably get past me.
Well, this is I'm a bit of a punk rocker myself, and I like my ska and everything else. So, if I have a bit of a low-down day, I generally bang some of these on to wake me up and get me going.
I think this is this Rowan Connolly sort of music he likes? Are you like with a Fett Lip? No.
No, I think he's a bit more extreme, grungy type stuff, heavy metal type things, yeah.
26 past nine, I've just actually, thank you to friends of mine who have provided me with a magnificent croissant and a hot chocolate. Just got to that stage where you need just a little lift. So I've scoffed that down with the tomato. I'm not a big tomato fan, but it was okay. We managed to...
You got through.
Managed to get it through. Now, you were in Brisbane for a few days.
Yeah, I went up to Brisbane to see my family, and my mum and dad are up there, and I've come back last night, and funnily enough, on the plane... coming back, met a guy. He's a bit of a consultant with Cricket Australia and stuff like that. And he was telling me there is definitely now a big push to play a Big Bash game on Christmas Day.
Yep.
So I think people are coming round. I think the AFL got a Good Friday game, you know, in the works. So now Christmas Day, hardly any, well, apart from in the States, you know, there's nothing really, you know. And we saw a couple of NFL games and five NBA games back to back. There's normally a bowl game, but because of the NFL, I think they've moved that bowl game this year. But, you know, what are people's thoughts about playing sport on Christmas Day?
Yeah, we certainly have been bringing this up over the last few years, and I reckon I've flip-flopped a little bit. And I did say here on Monday morning, Beefy, that maybe because I'm immersed in it and I work at this time of the year, that I really cherish a day off. But this is not for any of us to shove it down other people's throat, because we've all got different family setups. And I suppose those who would see one side of the family during the day and the other side at night enjoy that day. And I did, because I get to catch up with people I don't get to see all the time. So it's nice to chew the fat, but I reckon if it did get to about 7:30, as the night's starting to wind down after a second serving of the turkey, a Big Bash game in the background would be okay. So I don't think that'd be the issue to get a few people to watch.
No, I think the numbers
normally,
would be there.
By that stage, the corners of the room, people sort of disperse. You'll get those who are a little bit bored of the dining table conversation and might just venture into the TV room and put a movie on, and a few gather around on the beanbag. So if the Big Bash was on, they'd probably watch it. I feel for people more who would have to go and work.
Yeah.
So if we got a crowd here, whether it was Eddie Had or the Gene, 40, 50,000, it's all the people that have to work on Christmas Day. Although I feel like Christmas Day, just driving around on Monday, is sort of, I mean, it's obviously, it's a day where we do spend with our family, but there seem to be more things open and more people working. So Christmas Day, means different
and
things
to about,
different
you
people.
You talk about spending time with a family. The Big Bash is for families as well. I mean, it's not quite your test match or full one day. I mean, what you're seeing more and more with the Big Bash crowds is it is for the whole family. And it doesn't matter if you've got a 12-year-old daughter, 13-year-old son, 6 or 7-year-olds. They are all wanting to go to the Big Bash. My best mate lives in Brisbane. They went to see family down in Tasmania over Christmas.
Yep.
Where were they Boxing Day night? They were at Hobart for the Big Bash. Mm. Amazingly, he's got a 9-year-old daughter and a 4-year-old son, and they love the Big Bash.
Yep.
They cannot get enough of it. They don't miss a Heat game.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you've got this kind of, used to have a kind of a take it or leave it attitude to one day cricket or test cricket. Well, most definitely in test cricket. But all of a sudden, the Big Bash has brought families together. My mother never ever saw me play cricket, came once or twice. That was enough for her. But all of a sudden, goes to the Big Bash. And I think that's caught a lot of people's thinking unawares, that it's had that effect on families and wanting to actually go out and watch cricket.
Well, do you know, for the first time on Christmas Day, I actually said to my wife, it'd be good to do something maybe a little bit different. I mean, we always go to one side of the family. This is no disrespect to the family. Yeah. You can include the family in this.
Yeah.
And I heard Mike Larkin, the Channel 10 presenter, on with Kevin Hillier late last week, and Kev posed to Mike, what are you doing Christmas Day? Oh, yeah, the whole family, we're going to Crown. We're going to Crown Casino this year. So no one has to cook.
Yep.
No one has to clean up. We pay so much per head. We've got a room there, and we'll just see where the afternoon goes. We might, you know, go for a wander through the city or whatever. So it made me think, well, you know, you can do different things and still maybe incorporate the family.
No,
amongst it.
I think it's a wonderful idea. And obviously being at Crown, the wonderful people there and the top chefs that they employ, you're going to get a good feed. No complaints.
Right? Might be able to move. actually go anywhere. So, yeah, it's one we always bring up, and I suppose it is inevitable. You get that feeling that there's going to be some form of sport, and if it can slot in maybe to that 7 o'clock time slot.
I think when everyone's had enough of the day, and they've had their double helping of turkey, and Mum's just offered turkey toasties for tea. Mm. Next time perhaps it is time to get the Big Bash on. And the other thing is,
it's just whether you could find enough people to work, and then would the players be for it? I suppose.
That's the other thing. I mean, although saying that, they're professionals and a lot of them are here playing on, 6 to 8 week contracts anyway. Mm. Realistically, most of them train, I would imagine, at some stage, or they'll go and hit some balls, perhaps roll the arm over to stop them. You know, it just depends on the schedule and where it's at.
And certainly cricketers who played, who played over a long period in the Boxing Day test, I mean, they're used to having Christmas Day with their families there, but also dining with the Australian cricket team, and you have a session in the nets the morning of Christmas Day, enjoy the presents and the kids and all that sort of stuff. So they're sort of used to that.
And Warnie's legendary Christmas Eve parties down at Brighton as well. The players get involved in them, or shouldn't we talk about those?
Did that used to go on?
Yes, indeed, yes.
Right,
apparently. I'm not saying
that. So what, recover Christmas Day and then right
that's
to go.
It, and then right to play.
At 94291116, if you certainly want to join us. So I've worked in the event industry for 25 years. I'm not religious, but I don't want to go to work on another day that everyone has off. So there'll be that point of view, absolutely. So this is not to shove it down anyone's throat.
No, definitely not. And I think that's one of the things you have to consider. I mean, for a crowd of, 40,000-50,000, the MCG on Christmas Day, you're going to need 400 to 500 staff, security, catering and everything else. And don't forget, there'll be corporates there, and you're going to need those extra staff. And don't forget, the TV needs a camera crew and everything else, and there's production staff. I mean, I know they work Christmas anyway, but, there's an outside broadcast unit. It has to be, factored in, and there's costs involved. So, it's a great point, and, everything has to be considered.
What do you make of the cricket? I mean, look, unfortunately, as much as we love living in this great city, the sporting capital of the world, sometimes it can just play havoc.
Frustrating, really. Events. Yeah, frustrating because it's a very even test match. 3-10 for 6. The Pakistanis at the minute, and they've looked good as a great knock. Chanceless, basically, he's looked solid. When people have batted around him, and I don't know, I can't stress enough how many times I've said about occupying the crease, and they nearly pulled it off when the last time around by occupying the crease and not doing anything stupid apart from Yunis Khan, obviously. But in terms of that. To be honest, the bowlers have looked a little bit lethargic. To be honest, it's considering the conditions, and you expect it to swing and move just that little bit. Waking up this morning, me being a bowler, I'd love these conditions, and hopefully at 10 o'clock we might see it move around a bit if they get on. To be honest, because it's threatening to rain. But in terms of that, it's with only two days to go, though, it's going to be tough to get a result from here.
This is the interesting part, I reckon. With Australia in this sort of cluster of teams now at test level. We're certainly not the dominant team we used to be. And, I was watching the Sri Lankan South African game last night. And, the conditions in Port Elizabeth certainly have suited the bowlers in the first couple of days. I mean, Lakmal takes his best figures, 5 for 63. You watch Philander and you watch, I mean, Kyle Abbott's your stock bowler who will just keep hitting the mark and get an outside edge. Rabada's got some genuine pace and gets some really good speed up. So you just feel like when you watch their bowling attack, and obviously they outdid Australia for 2 of the 3 test matches here, that there's a little bit more potency to it. And, obviously the Australian bowling lineup, I mean, if we ever get Pattinson and Cummins back, You know, you sort of just need that bowler who's got a little bit of that X factor.
But you also need that diversity. You need that variety that's going to cause, you know, those little bit of problems and us indifference. And that's what Australia had for years, obviously, with, well, look, when you had McGrath and Warne, you know, you have, you know, unbelievable diversity. McGrath wasn't going to pace you out or beat you for pace or anything, but he did hit the same spot time and time again, got great variation in bounce because of his height. Mm. And then you had Warne, you know, every ball was threatening. So, but basing around that, you know, you had these, I'm not going to say bit part players, but you had the guys making up this diversity that were going to blast you out, or they were going to, you know, nick you out in terms of just being there or thereabouts. And I think England have shown that with Anderson and Broad for so long. Mm. They haven't had a genuine third seamer.
No.
They haven't had a spinner for God knows how long. You know, Moeen Ali's been filling that spot for the past 5 or 6 years, and he's by no means a quality spinner. So in terms of that, South Africa have always shown the way. I mean, they're Donald and Pollock for so long, and Fanny de Villiers, and, you know, and these guys, it's how you bowl in units as well.
Correct.
You've got to bowl in teams, and me being a bowler, you know, it's always frustrating when you bowled a maiden, you bowled a really good over, and then somebody comes down the other end and bowls four long ops and two full tosses, and all of a sudden, you know, you're trying to bring the batsman back to you a little bit. And it's tough that way. Yeah. So,
no doubt. I think it's great for the batsmen, though, as we head to the break. The Pakistanis digging in here. Sri Lanka had to dig in their middle to lower order. And, you know, they're two nations that haven't always played their best cricket traditionally in the Southern Hemisphere, who have struggled with those seeming conditions. And, you know, I can just see their batsmen have, you know, done some hard work in that regard. Okay, let's dig in here. We might, the run rate might be very slow for the next hour. We're not going to give our wicket away.
No. Can we forget about the things I said when I was drunk? Didn't mean to call you back.
19 to 10, they bring it back, Burke.
Lit, my own worst enemy, gets you up in the morning.
Righto. If you're not fired up by now, get into a big Wednesday, folks. Tell you what, the weather's not looking all that flesh.
No, it's coming
outside
in, isn't
of
it?
Heading to the
coming
cricket
in,
today.
I need to check the radar.
You're heading to the G?
I'm off to the cricket today, hopefully get a full day in, but I can't see it. And I need to check the radar soon to make sure we will get some play. But early start, guys, this morning starts in 17 minutes if it's happening.
Indeed, we're going to catch up with Graham Smokey Dawson very shortly to set the scene and give us his take on day number three, which doesn't look all that good at the moment. And Pakistan, they want a result, although they'll certainly, I reckon, fancy their chances up in Sydney. They can at least walk away with a one-all result if we can't get a result here. Now, that would be a satisfying tour, considering they got thrashed by the Kiwis, of course.
Yeah, that's it. They're decent in the UAE, and you know, they don't play at home anymore. But get them on the road, it's a bit tough. And obviously, just after playing in the UAE this year, they actually moved to number one in the Test rankings, and they've dropped off since then. But
you've got to say, and I spoke to Smokey about this yesterday, that Miss Barrett 42 hasn't really fired a shot in this series or New Zealand, and Yunus occupying a fair bit of time at the crease, a half century in Brisbane, 21 off about 60 deliveries yesterday.
Yeah. Played a silly shot up
39.
Up in Brisbane. He is 39 going 40. Well, they say he's 39. He's been around for 25 years, so I don't think he made his debut at 15. I mean, but no, indeed, and great player. And these two have been the mainstay, you know, with Inzaman and, you know, of that middle order. So it's, difficult, though. You know, are they stopping younger players coming? And everyone else in the team is near enough, you know, early 20s.
Yeah, look, they always unearth a couple of absolute gems too. I mean, the 16, 17, 18-year-olds who have, you know, been put in. And obviously it works a lot differently over there. It can be very political, a bit like India in terms of selection.
Yep, and they, you know, and not
state you come from. And,
well, that's it. And not playing international matches at home doesn't help. You know, you struggle to discover these players that aren't in the first-class scene and not, you know, not getting a chance, unfortunately, because they've got to travel.
But if he was talking about Christmas Day and the continuing changing of the nature, I suppose, of Christmas Day and what it means. Guys, leave one day to the family. You've got cricket, football, everything else going on every other day. Leave one day where it's actually just about the family. And I have no objection to that whatsoever. But this is a continuing topic that's not going to go away. And you just get the feeling we're going to see some sort of professional sport here in Australia. Christina in Sandringham, I work in aged care. Hate having to leave my family to go to work. It's the one day of the year we should have as a relaxed day. Why not have BBL on Christmas Day? It's a fun, happy day. Good Friday is the most sacred day, and it's disrespected by so many sports. Most recently, the AFL. So,
it's amazing, isn't it, how the attitudes, it's changing. If we'd have mentioned this 3 years ago, absolutely no. No Good Friday, no Christmas Day. And all of a sudden, people are coming around the fact that perhaps a religious aspect is dropping off, that just that touch to embrace sport and bring in... And no doubt, what do we say all the time? There's sport out there for everyone. And fortunately, especially for people in our position, sport is bringing families together. Now, whether you go or watch on TV, it's totally amazing. And it remains to be seen whether, it would draw 30 or 40,000 to a Christmas Day game.
Yeah, it certainly would get the TV viewership. There's no doubt about that. Whether it got the crowd, but that's right. It's maybe changing, if you incorporate sport into Christmas Day. You'd listen to so many callers. You just talk to people in general sometimes. Oh, Christmas Day, I just eat a lot. Then we're all on the couch going to sleep at 3 o'clock and, you got to talk to Auntie... Auntie Joyce and Uncle Fred and chew the fat, and I just want to go home. So, look, it's all different, and I love my family, so I love catching up with the aunties, and it's absolutely genuine. I had two great chats with two aunties of mine who I haven't seen for a long time. Yep. So I value that personally on Christmas Day, but each to their own, Beefy.
Exactly right. Can't fault it. And, it's growing up in Britain, it used to be the Queen's Speech at 3 o'clock, it used to be on TV, it used to be the highlight for families, and, you watch what the Queen had to say, and... Moonraker used to be on in the evening nearly every year for some unknown reason.
She's still stuck at Sandringham because she had the cold over the last
She had the
few
cold
years.
And instead of getting the train, she had to get the chopper. Still kicking along.
Oh, she's doing
still
right.
Kicking along.
Prince Philip, he's just looking at all those engagements for 2017. You've got to be kidding me. Oh, I'm just about done. Hey, we talked about the Sydney to Hobart earlier today.
Yeah.
Can you imagine yourself? You've gone and watched a lot of sport.
I can tell you a story about last year's Sydney to Hobart.
Yep.
Myself and Rob from 365 Days of Sport, we went to the start of the Sydney Hobart last year. Rob jumped on the media boat to go out with the fleet, and I organised a boat of myself to get out and take some footage and meet some people. I am not the best sailor of all time, and I got fed lunch as we went out. And as you just get out past the kind of the edge of the harbour in, outside, just the waves start hitting this boat. So I ate my lunch 6 times that day, unfortunately, and I got laughed at by the rest of the sailors there. Oh my God, it was rough as hell. Amazing to see this fleet come by and how big these maxi yachts are. They're huge.
And fly.
They absolutely 30-40 Ks. And you think, 30-40 Ks in a car, great. You're just trudging along. But 30-40 knots on the ocean watching these things, impossible. It's not exactly, they don't turn. There's no brakes. Amazing to see, and it's an amazing fact that they can get to Hobart so quickly. Obviously weather conditions were spot on, but millions and millions of dollars worth of equipment there. And last year in Sydney to Hobart, two boats didn't even leave the harbour. They collided, and there was a few this year early retirements. But it's amazing. It's great for Australia to have these international events, this time of year to bring people down and. And what do we say? Everybody has their sport, and it generates massive crowds.
It's a very passionate crowd, the sailing crowd. And look, I've met a few of them because my wife's been involved. But, we talked to Neville Rose here, who's doing the Melbourne to Devonport, although he didn't quite get there. His boat, Christine, unfortunately, packed it up at Blair Gowrie after the Boxing Day bash. But the amount of effort they put in, it's all the maintenance.
Oh.
Of the boat along the journey and the money put in, and you need a good crew. It's like picking a footy team. You've got to pick the right people because it's all about cohesion. You've got to get out there, play your role, and just be selfless and no whinging, no putting yourself above anyone else. It's just a selfless
that's exactly
exercise.
Right. And obviously, you don't stop when it gets dark either. They're going through the night. And you've got to know exactly what's going on and what you have to do and where your shifts are, when you need to sleep and when you need to eat. Everything's kind of, it's a regiment,
One of my favourites, Carry the Banner.
Oh, you've got to love it. Flatliners.
Absolutely awesome. I'll tell you what, I've had a lift. I've had a croissant.
Yep.
I've had a hot chocolate.
You've had some punk
your
rock.
Your pumping tunes this hour. It's going to get me through the next couple of hours, yeah. I'll tell you what. 94291116 if you want to join us. Now, I want to get your thoughts on Barb Radley, who's gone 85 days at Swansea. Now, you know this part of the world yep. extremely well.
Well, I'm from Newport, and Swansea's about 30 miles down the road, and a lot of my mates are Swansea fans, and especially since they've been in the Premier League. But Bob Bradley, or Brad Bobley, as he's been known back in the UK at the minute due to his interesting tactics, he first American manager in the Premier League,
yep.
possibly the last,
mm.
Has not kind of endeared himself to the fans whatsoever. And to be honest, my mates saw this from like the first or second game, and that, you know, you'd like to give managers, you know, a bit of chance to settle in and do stuff. But
so, what in particular made the fans irate? Just what he's
just
formations,
tactics. Yeah,
tactics.
Basically everything.
Yeah,
it's been tough because the Americans. American conglomerate that owned DC United in Washington bought 60% of the club, so have taken over, and they've had an American agenda ever since they've been there, which hasn't helped. Now, he's come over and he's got no contacts, and the name of the game in especially the Premier League is who you know,
yeah.
and what players you can bring in, and if you've had no experience in bringing in top class players from Europe, from South America. There's not many in the States to bring over and make a difference. Now, Francisco Guidolin, who was in charge, had those contacts. Even though he was a bit older, he was probably tough to get sacked when he was. But Swansea have been around that 8th to 10th, you know, knocking on the door, Europa League, competitive in the cup matches and everything else. And they've wanted a bit more success. And, you know, it's tough to follow that, but... You know, he's conceded 29 goals in 11 games. Now, when you're conceding nearly three goals a game, it's tough to win from there. And the old adage in football is, if they don't score, you don't lose.
Yep.
You know, and that should be the credence of the Premier League, essentially, even though it's there for entertainment and everything else. But they just haven't got the firepower. They brought in a couple of Spaniards to play at Florentin Llorente, and it's just not had the supply. And the one thing they really did wrong, they've had the heart and soul of the club, Ashley Williams, they sold, you know, on the eve of the season, off the back of a good Euros. Now, Swansea are a Welsh club without many Welsh players. Now, you need that base of Welsh players that are going to fight for the shirt, because that's where they want to be, and that's what they're fighting for. Wales against England, week in, week out.
Yeah.
If you get rid of that Welsh base all of a sudden, especially when he's the Welsh captain, you know, that's tough. And they haven't replaced him. And they haven't recovered from getting rid of Ashley Williams. And unfortunately, if they would have sacked him a week ago, then Big Sam may well have come down to Swansea, and that he would have changed the club around. Obviously, he's just jumped on with Palace.
Yeah, got a point for Palace the other morning.
I don't know who Swansea are going to replace him with. It's
who's out of a job? What about Harry? Could Harry come back?
Oh, that's a possibility.
What's
think
he been
about
doing?
Harry?
One of our favourites. We did try and get him on about 3 years ago, yep. Harry Redknapp, and we had to go through a few channels. We thought we were close. Yeah, when he was flying at that stage,
yeah,
Harry.
See what I can do there with Harry. But I don't know where Swansea. Brian Flynn is a possibility who nobody will know. He's a Welsh youth manager. He's done great things. John Toshek, they've talked about, another Welshman.
Yep.
The other one is Chris Coleman. He's a Welsh manager now. He's done great things.
Year,
Wales just finished the year in the 12th in the world. So
yep.
In terms of that, Coleman is a Swansea boy as well. That's a possibility. So...
Oops. Oh, a couple of new tunes so you head to the break.
Sorry about that.
Gee, it's a bit out of what you're normally.
Yeah, so Swansea, I feel sorry for him a little bit, but without replacing him in January, I can't see how they're going to stay up, to be honest.
As we head to 10 o'clock now, we always like to get something a little bit obscure from yourself.
Yeah, in terms... Now, Boxing Day,
all
over the world, been great for sport, as we talk about Christmas Day and everything else. Up in Moyston in Victoria, a little bird tells me that there used to be a rabbit skinning world championships every Boxing Day. Now, I'm led to believe that that's not happening anymore. Has anyone in Victoria seen the rabbit skinning world championship? Moyston, near Ararat, just outside. So, and I don't know why Moyston was the rabbit skinning capital of the world either. So
I can't say I've heard of Moyston.
Yes, it's just outside Ararat.
Okay.
Yeah.
There wouldn't be many there, I'd imagine.
Not too many. Mm. Obviously, you've got a footy club and football netball club, I would imagine. Mm. They normally do, don't they?
General store,
post office, pub. That's it.
Just the things
you
need.
So rabbit skinning. I'd love to well,
I bet we do some digging in the next 24 hours.
We should do some digging tomorrow. We'll find out. We'll find out who the current rabbit skinning world champion is. Might get him on. Yeah. Get him down.
All right, we'll do some digging over the next 24 hours. That's what we do with Beefy. We just unveil our championships that we didn't even know existed.
That's right.
And they've got some history.